Yo. Hey guys, welcome back to another awesome edition of the Best Practices Show. Our goal of this podcast is to find the greatest thinkers, teachers, speakers anywhere in the world to share some wisdom so that you can enjoy going to work. And we are going to do exactly that today with a dear friend of mine, Deborah Engelhart Nash. She's brilliant. If you haven't seen her, you need to see her. And today she gives us a framework of two questions that you can ask to know if you're doing the right thing. And she gives us a whole bunch of other tips that are amazing. So please listen up and we'll see you soon. Guys, welcome back to the Best Practices Show podcast. Hope you're enjoying this as much as I am. And one of the things I get to do is interview some of the greatest people who have the greatest minds in all of dentistry and just bring some great value today. And I have a special one today. She's one of my favorite people in the universe. She's become a great mentor, great friend of mine. Heck, she was calling me yesterday saying, you got to do this. And so Deborah Engelhart Nash. And I did. I got to listen to her. So she's amazing. And today we're going to be talking. Have you ever wondered, like, I wonder if I'm doing the right thing? And she's got some great frameworks. We're going to be talking about two questions to know if you're doing the right thing with Deborah Engelhart Nash. So excited to have you back. Thank you so much for being here.
It's always great to be with you. It's always fun. Yeah. They have no idea how much we talk about during pre-show and how we create new content based on our pre-show conversations.
You know, we could actually take that pre-show segment and we could exclusively put that and we'd have to edit it in some fashion, but it's so much fun. And
I think we're pretty clean this time. Anyway,
we are a great team. Yes. Good to see you. As always. And so we have a lot of young listeners now, and I want them to know who they're listening to. So I want you to give everybody a little bit of bio. We're going to give you a lot of value today, but I want people to know, who's Deborah? What do you do?
Oh, my goodness. My goodness. Well, I have been in the industry over 40 years. My degree is in education. I was recruited. I was recruited by my dentist years ago. When all the bond issues failed and nobody was hiring a liberal arts school teacher like me, and my dentist said, Bo, you'd be great in a dental office. I said, isn't dentistry a science? And he said, and he was smart. He was a professor at University of Washington. And he said, really, dentist, the most important thing. And we did the Myers-Briggs test and all that. And he said, dentistry is really about people and you've got some great people skills. I can teach you the clinical application of what we do, but you've got some inherent characteristics that I really want in my office. So he taught me he had me read 5 chapters on dental assisting. He put me at the chair to teach me dental assisting. And then he matriculated me or he moved me up to the front desk. So I always thought that was a promotion, not a demotion. Mm-hmm. And from there, I ended up working for him for a while. Then I went to work and I managed a 4-man, probably one of the original 4-man solo groups in Washington State. A solo group practice, 4 independent dentists sharing a facility, carrying a common area, but having individual practice. And I managed the four-man group. And one of the dentists, the youngest, said, you know, someday you're gonna outgrow this. And we had a tendency, he was kind of a Dr. Phil Whitener groupie, and you probably remember Phil Whitener, but some of these people will never know. Phil Whitener was Jim Pride's partner. Okay. Way back when Jim Pride first started the Pride Institute, and we were kind of his groupie, and they started the Pride Institute, and I was recruited to be a consultant for Pride, and I was a Pride consultant for the Pacific Northwest, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and Northern California, and then in 1985 I decided that we had a little bit of a values collision. And my values collision was that I really think that a dentist, a client, should be able to treatment plan with the consultant. And so many times, and I'm not fault, there are some great systems. I mean, my colleagues have great systems. And I understand if you have 30 consultants in the field, if you're like you, but there's also got to be, it also has to be customizable according to that particular patient, that client's needs. Well, that was not part of the program at the time. So 9 of us actually left and started the Academy of Dental Management Consultants, which is now 150 people. But we were independent consultants wanting to collaborate, corroborate. And I've been consulting since 1985, doing that, speaking, writing. I won the Gordon Christensen Award in 2015. When I got the letter, I thought it was to my husband, Dr. Nash. I thought, and I kept looking for his name in the letter. And I had to call and say, who is this to? And they said, well, it's you. We're giving it to you. So I've been the president of the Academy of Dental Management Consultants 3 times. I am now the soon-to-be immediate past president. But I'm now currently for about a week the president of the Academy for Private Dental Practice, which is a 63-year-old organization that a lot of people don't even know about, on how to perpetuate private practice dentistry. Not suggesting the DSOs are bad,
right?
But there is an alternative.
Yeah.
So I'm part of that organization. I still speak. I still consult. And I still go into dental offices. I write. I love what I do. My non-dental friends wonder why I'm still doing this. They say, why? I was supposed to retire in 2011 when I had my brain tumor. And I just didn't want to. And so I said, you know, when I no longer love it, and I no longer feel like I'm making a difference, when I no longer feel relevant, then I'll be obsolete. And it'll be time for me to go out to pasture.
Yeah, you can't retire. I will be so sad. And you bring so much value. No, you can't. You're having too much fun. And then we're also coming off the heels of the Chicago midwinter meeting, which is an amazing meeting, which you spoke there. You're still bringing the value. So I'm telling you guys, if you haven't seen her speak, you got to go. Number one, it's going to be wildly entertaining. Number two, you're going to learn a ton. And then number three, you will be inspired for sure.
Thank you.
So
thank you. It was really kind of at this last Chicago, a couple people came up to me at the end and said, can I hug you? And they were kind of teary. And, you know, when you can make a difference, that's once again, like you, when you can make a difference, then someone's going to go back to work on Monday with a different perspective, or they feel a little bit lighter about their load. If I can do that for people, I'll keep doing this.
Amen. Amen. Turns into a calling and it's not a job. So now today we're going to be talking this. I've got a couple things that I want to talk about, Deborah. We're in separate shows because she's that good. But today, the two questions, knowing if you're doing the right thing, before you reveal them, let's talk about the why. Because why would a dentist need to know these two questions on a daily basis or a team?
Well, you know, it's interesting how I developed these two questions. Was for my own sake as a consultant. So when I was going in to observe an office, I had those two questions always in the back of my mind. So my why was, you know, that I'm not going to say, okay, we're going to erase everything you know. We're going to erase everything you do, and you're going to have to do it my way. That was always my frustration. You know, you're not, if it's working, then let's make it work better. Let's help it be more effective. But if it's working, let's just pay more attention to those things that need more help, that need better, you know, that could maybe should be eliminated or minimized. Or so my why was about, first of all, not thinking you had to blow up every, you know, start from scratch on everything. Let's start from scratch on what isn't working. Then we can take a look and fine tune those things that seem to be working, could be improved, but seem to be working. I also think the reason for that is that oftentimes, and you know, you have consultants, that when a dentist is considering bringing somebody from your group in, or bringing someone like me in, the team freaks out. They think they're going to lose their identity. They're going to lose their autonomy. They're going to lose the culture of the practice. And I think you would agree with me that we're not there to kill the culture, unless it's a bad culture. Right. But we're either there to build the culture or refine the culture or strengthen the culture. And if we have to create one, we will. But I mean, a culture's been created. The dental office is a petri dish.
Yeah.
It's a petri dish.
You got to go further in that. What does that mean? It's a petri dish. And then I want you to tell the story at midwinter. So go ahead. Why is a dental office a petri dish? Explain
because
that.
because there's stuff in there. There's good bacteria and there's bad bacteria. And if you think about a Petri dish, stuff grows in there. I mean, right. Culture and attitudes grow in the dental practice. Standards, and sometimes unbeknownst to the owner, sometimes unbeknownst to the doctor, culture has been growing. I mean, it's almost like when you find this little, that little black darkness in the corner of your room and you say, what is that? And you say, oh my gosh, it's mold has been growing in here. Mushrooms have been growing in here. So I think sometimes it's important to look at the Petri dish to see what's growing. What is growing? What's growing in this culture? Is it the culture I wanted, or did it get infected? Did a virus get in? Did other bacteria get in there? Much like the story, which leads me to the story that in, you know, the Chicago story.
Yeah. So you're speaking and a woman. Yeah. You got to tell the story. I love it. Go.
So I'm speaking and my topic was increasing the effectiveness of communication. Excuse me. And we were talking about things to say to your hygiene patient. You know, once again, this will kind of be a teaser for my six killer questions. But that, and you and I have talked about this, the best question that a hygienist would ask a patient of record who has an unscheduled treatment in their records. So patient's been a patient for a gazillion years. They have been treatment planned for years on having two crowns on the upper left. They haven't done them. You know, so many times hygienists go in and say, you know, we've talked about these crowns before, or the hygienist says, you know, we've talked to her about those crowns before. Let's stop talking about it. She's not going to do them. She has a low dental IQ. So we were talking about how you turn the conversation around to the hygienist saying something like, I see that doctor has recommended these crowns several years ago and you have yet to complete them. Tell me what has prevented you from having them done. So then we were talking about what would the patient answer? Would the patient say they're too expensive? It doesn't bother me. I don't see the necessity if the insurance is going to pay for it. And I was role playing with a woman in the audience in Chicago. And I said, so tell me what would prevent you from having that done? And she looked at me and she said, you know, I have to be honest with you. I don't see my team taking the time to learn new skills. I don't see my team taking the time to change their behavior or taking the time to be trained. I think my team wouldn't go the extra mile and do this.
So what did you say? What did you say? I'm like, I'm freaking out right now because that's very real to this person.
Very real.
What did you say?
You know, and I said, wow. I said, so there has been a precedent that has been established in your practice that it's okay not to grow. And there's only, I mean, once again, Petri dish, there's something's growing in there, but not what you want to grow. And I said, you know, there's only two reasons why someone doesn't do something. This is not my two questions. There's two reasons. I either don't know how or I don't want to.
Right.
Well, if I don't know how, you can teach me how. If I don't want to, you can't teach me. But somewhere along the line, a precedent was established that it was okay. First of all, it was okay to be insubordinate.
Right.
And say, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do it. And it was almost a fear factor was created that we're really afraid of offending any of our team members because they might leave.
Right.
And if we ask them to do anything extra, and I said, but are you getting what you want? Are you getting what you want out of the team that you have? And you may not have to lose that team member, but here would be the question to ask the team member. Help me understand what's preventing you from moving forward with having these conversations with our patients. And how do you think it would make your life different if you had that conversation? And how do you think it would make the life of the practice different if you had that conversation? And what do you think the results would be if we made a difference in the lives of our patients, in the lives of our practice?
It's a powerful question.
How would that look?
Yeah.
What would that look like? And what would be your expectations? If that were my team member, I'd say, you know what? we need to, you know, help me understand what's preventing you from wanting to have this kind of conversation with the patient. Now, I have heard some interesting stories out in the field. Yeah. Kind of scary, interesting. I have heard team members say to me, they're not a very good dentist. I've heard team members say, I'm not really quite sure of the quality of care. I said, wow, that means we have to have a bigger conversation.
Right.
If the team doesn't understand what we're trying to accomplish and that we're trying to accomplish it well, if the team doesn't understand the clinical reasonings or the clinical commitment that the doctor has for patients, then we haven't had enough of conversation. We haven't brought the patient, we haven't brought the team into a cultural, a good environment to feel good about. I mean, to feel good about extolling the virtues of the practice, or to feel good about endorsing, that's one of my big, when we talk about the six killer questions, one of my big issues is the team endorsing the doctor.
Right.
So what would be preventing you, Kirk, from endorsing me?
Nothing. And so
that would be a question that a doctor should ask. What?
For sure.
What's preventing you from if I were the dentist and you were my employee, I might say, Kirk, I have a problem and I need your help.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel you're not endorsing what we have to offer here. Help me understand why.
Yeah. And Deborah, this is so good. And one of the things you and I were talking about this before we hit the go button. I mean, even last week, people were like, I just feel like I'm being held hostage. And I'm like, you created that.
Her comment was, wow, in today's labor pool, they're managing with a fear factor. Mm-hmm. They're not managing. They're basically coming in, holding their breath and saying, please don't leave today. Please don't leave today. Please don't leave today.
Right.
And so they're letting the direction of the practice being forced into maybe going into a pattern that they really don't want.
Yeah. And I think that's a huge opportunity. That's for another. I mean, we're going to create a lot of podcasts here. But here's what I would say is we're going to get into
it. Let me go back. You know what the solution is for this?
Thought. I want to know yours.
Okay. You need to meet more. Right. The team needs to, you need to meet more. And so, I mean, we don't want to avoid team meetings. We don't want to avoid conversations. We need to have them. And sometimes conversations have to be critical. Sometimes they have to be crucial. But, you know, so, wow, if my team is running amok, and I would say that team's running a little bit amok, saying, yeah. I'm afraid to ask my team to talk to the patients like this. Wow. Then we need to sit down. We need to meet more.
Yeah. So going back to your two questions on I either don't know how to or I don't want to, those are behaviors, more specifically number two. And so if you listen to the previous podcast, you'll hear like, I agree, meet more. And I'm a big fan of core values only because I had a coach make me do it years ago. And it's a flag in the ground where you stop tolerating behavior that you don't want to see. And once you make that commitment, there's no turning back and the crazy stuff goes away. Now, do you have a perfect practice? No. But at the end of the day, you got people that are all in. They're like, I will do anything for these because they believe in you. And so my heart goes out to that person who shared that with you. But I would also say there's a much better way. And it requires.
I also coached a doctor this morning and he's got a team issue. And here's what I coached him. I coached him because he really cares about this person. And what he is getting ready to say to this person is, I like you too much to let you perform this way.
Ooh.
I know.
I love that.
I like you too much to let you perform this way.
Yeah. Love it. So. Yeah. You stick around long enough on this podcast, you're going to hear the greatest stuff from the greatest minds ever.
Gotten to my two questions
we
yet.
We got to get to the two questions. So give us the two questions, either one at a time or together. Tell us how it works.
Well, when I walk into a dental office, when I speak to groups, I would say, you can be your own consultant, and here's how you can do that. Ask yourself these two questions. First, ask yourself, and we'll go through an example. Is this system? Let's talk about systems. And we can use the example of financial arrangements.
Right.
Are these financial arrangements that we've designed for our patients good for the practice? And then the second question is, are these financial arrangements good for the patients? Yes. Well, you can reverse them. So an example might be, and I always ask this question, allowing your patients to make small payments over a long period of time in office, is that good for them?
No.
Now, I would argue that it isn't.
No.
But a lot of times my audience will say, yeah, they would. Patients would love that.
No.
No. Okay, so let's suggest that we're going to say, yes, allowing your patients to make small payments over a long period of time in the dental office is good for the patient. Let's ask the second question. Is it good for the practice?
No, that's a double no.
No. So it's not going to work.
Right.
If you have to answer no to either question, then it's not going to work. It will eventually fail because it's got to be good for both the patient and the practice.
Yep.
So when you're talking even about, we're talking about hygiene, you know, you could have an amazing, outstanding producer. Well, we could have an outstanding team member. We're going to say hygienist. Stop picking on them. We could have an outstanding team member. But if they create havoc, if they're not a great team player, if let's say they're amazing, but people don't want to work with them.
Right.
You know, they create a problem every morning. They create a problem. So the question is, say, hey, is this team member good for the patient? Yeah, they're great producers and they're great at the chair, but are they good for the practice?
Yeah.
Or are they a detriment to the culture of who we are?
Yeah. And I would say definitely not good for the practice.
Yeah. They're not good for the practice.
They're probably not good for patients or practice. Yeah.
So I always say, so when I'm running through, and whether it be, and we talked about the example of a producing, a great team member who was paid on commission over in producing, but patients complained about how they felt while they were in their care. They didn't feel that they felt rushed. The team members felt that they were being segregated because they didn't ask for any help because that would affect their commission and their pay structure. So they became a non-team player. And so then you ask yourself, is that scenario good for the patient? It's not. Is it good for the practice? It's not. So then we have to change the behavior. We have to change the system or we have to change the behavior. So if the behavior isn't good for the patients and isn't good for the practice, we can even take it down to you have a team member who's habitually late.
Yeah.
Habitually late. So you have to ask yourself, is it good for the practice that this team player is habitually late?
No.
No. Is it good for the patient? No.
No.
So we've got to correct the behavior. Or we have to, it's serious conversation, and we have to change the person.
Yeah, I love this framework. Deborah, this is brilliant. I'm going to throw one at you that you get too. Yeah. So I talk to a lot of people. This is common in threads about hygiene. My doctor wants to go from 1 hour appointments to 30 minute appointments. Can you take us through those two questions?
Okay, so let's go back to: is it good for the patient? Will we have an opportunity to have a conversation with the patient? I mean, could we perform the muscular motions per minute in 30 minutes?
No.
Could we do radiographs? Could we do? Let's say we could. Let's say we can
maybe,
do a prophy.
Yeah.
We can do radiographs. We can do an oral cancer screening exam. We can do periodontal probings. But let's say we can do the muscular motions. But can we have a conversation? No. Can we engage in relationship? Probably not. Oh my gosh. How much time do we have? So here's the situation. So then we get a situation where the doctor's doing what I call the flashing blue light special, dine and dash, in and out, get it. And then we wonder, so I get so excited. I start yelling at people. We wonder why the patients say, you know, I just want to have my teeth cleaned. I don't really want an exam today. Because they don't see the value in the flashing blue light special. Why am I paying $125 for the doctor to come and say, hey, everything looks great and good to see you. And oh my gosh, and how are the kids and how's your golf game and what's going on? I'll see you at the church social on Sunday. And oh my gosh, everything looks wonderful. See you next time. What happens if that? years ago, 1.5 million years ago, well, I feel like the mother on Golden Girls. Picture this, Sicily, you know, 1912. I was living in Linwood, Washington, and I had a temporary crown on number 8. I was going to a dentist who was a Mark Cooper, full mouth rehabilitation, reconstructive, prostho, general practitioner guy. And he came in to do my recall exam, but he was obviously thinking about getting in and getting out as quickly as possible because he had to get onto the bigger case. And I, as he was walking out of the room, I said, "Hey, Norm, do you think it's time for me to replace this crown on number 8? And he said, and as he was leaving the room, he said, "If you want to."
Oh my gosh.
He never even turned around. He didn't have time to turn around. Well, for him, I was a single unit restoration, but in another doctor's eyes, I was 18 units. Because we were going to change my smile. The point is time. You've got to take time to, first of all, re-engage that patient back to your practice, to re-enthuse them back into the practice, to re-brand yourself with them, and to recreate the loyalty that they've had. Never assume, you know, that it's almost like, well, they love me. They've been my patient for 25 years. Yeah, do they love you or do they love your hygienist?
Right.
Well, so many times doctors will say, "I'm really afraid of letting my hygienist go. She's really not the best, but I'm afraid that if my hygienist leaves, she's going to take, or they are going to take the patients that have been seen with them." First of all, it's a HIPAA violation if they do.
Right.
But secondly, it's like, "Gee, doctor, why do you think your patients have more allegiance to your hygienist than they have to you?" It's because you're not spending enough time with them. And it goes back to, is it good for the practice that you're not re-engaging them into you? So going back to that 30-minute hygiene exam, is it good for the patient? No. Is it good for the practice? No. Don't do it. It's the wrong thing to do.
Yeah. And so you might be thinking, Deborah's questions are amazing. And for the really challenging issues, you might like, this is obvious. Let me throw you kind of a hard one. And you've seen this before too, and our coach. Let's say we're doing something, it's really good for the patient. But we had Deborah in our office years ago, and she helped us write this system and her first, but it's still sitting in a binder. There are times where you have to go, the system is not serving us anymore. We've got to upgrade the system. Can you speak to that in the two questions?
Yeah. I mean, think about this. I mean, I grew up in the world of hydrocolloid.
Right.
You know, the little tubes and the water and the little bubbles. We have technology now. Right. We have 3D scanners. Patients aren't having the impression in their mouths anymore. So the system, it goes back to, that system may have worked when we didn't have technology. That system may have worked when you didn't have communication systems that were more efficient and more effective. It amazed me in Chicago when I asked people, how many of you use text to pay?
Crickets.
Few. And I say, are you kidding? I said, how many of you pay your bills online? Mm-hmm. How many of you book your airlines online? How many of you make reservations? Dinner reservations online. How many? And I said, so you don't think your patients want to be able to pay their bill online? That's the archaic. So you need to review and say, are we still current with today's systems? Have we changed? Yeah. Have we changed the way we schedule? Have we changed the way we talk to patients about scheduling? Have we really explored the current trends and what our patient, also known as a consumer, what they want? And interestingly enough, when we talk about systems, a Harvard study they're talking about consumerism and the expectations of today's consumer. There's all kinds of statistics, but one of them is consumers have a higher expectation of service than they ever have had before.
For sure. And they're constantly underwhelmed in dentistry, don't you think?
And, you know, here's the good news and the bad news. And I would say this, the good news about social media is our friend and our foe.
Right.
Because my expectations as a consumer, I can get a whole lot of information online. Oh my gosh. This goes back to even, so this goes back to this. So can your patients get diagnosis and get treatment plans online? They can they get pop-in veneers online? And they used to be able to get orthodontics online, but they can't anymore because right. That went bankrupt. That didn't go well. It actually even sometimes Kirk goes to like consulting. Can I get consulting online? I can. Is it the same as going into somebody's office and you working with the team? It's different.
These are humans.
So yeah, your team can get a lot of information online and they can get treatment planned online. They can have a virtual consult online. Is it the same as being in your office? It isn't.
No, it's not. It's not. And so take me into a little, I love these questions. So I'm going to pretend to be a 32-year-old dentist you're coaching. Deborah, I love these questions. How you came into my office, you're teaching us, how do I further use them in team meetings? Like how do I constantly ingrain this in part of our culture? Can you talk about that just on a regular basis?
I think a great question. And I think once again, there should always be a time out. We don't call it role playing anymore because people get freaky geeky when you say, we're going to role play. And they go, you know, so
it's true. Very true.
Yeah. They don't like it. So what term do you use when you're talking about a new skill?
Well, when you're talking about a new skill, gosh, you're opening up Pandora's box. We take them through what's called stages of change. And it's this, you got to go through five stages because you heard it as a course. You went to see Deborah and you're like, rah, 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 rah. And then you throw it at your team and you're like, watch this, let's do this. And they're like, what is he talking about?
Yeah.
And you're further up the scale than they are. You have to be patient enough as a leader to go, they haven't heard this. You heard it, and now you're transferring the information. Most dentists are terrible. So I could go on and on and on and on and on. But I do hear that quite a bit. People don't like the role play. And then I'm like, well, then you still need to teach frameworks. You still need to practice. You still need to, you know, the best ones, they don't mind role playing or verbal skills matter. Don't you agree?
And, you know, it's interesting because when you were talking about that, two thoughts come to mind.
Tell me.
First of all, one word can make a huge difference.
Give me an example.
I'll give a couple of examples. One of them is, I like you, I love you. That's huge. That's different. But if I go into dentistry, it's just a cleaning.
Ooh.
It's an important cleaning. This is just, I'm just calling to remind you. This is an important reminder.
Love that.
That changes everything. This is an important reminder as opposed to this. I worked with one of the communications companies years ago, and I said, you people have got to change. This is just a friendly reminder. You need to change it to, this is an important reminder.
Explain the psychology behind the word just.
It minimizes everything. It makes it insignificant. It's just a cleaning. It's just a little filling. I had a client one time, she used to say, she didn't even realize, this is another piece. Oh my gosh, here we go. 45% of the time we spend is habitual. 45% of the time we spend in our lives is habitual.
Okay, explain so that.
She had a habit. She had a habit.
Right.
She had a habit of saying, this is just a little filling. It's just a zzz, zzz, zzz. It's a little filling. She was mimicking the drill. Zzz, zzz. So why am I paying $275 for a zzz, zzz filling? Why?
Right.
And I said, I didn't realize I was doing that.
Oh my gosh.
I hear it's just a, and so when patients call to say, I need to cancel my hygiene appointment, it was just a cleaning. Yeah. Who taught them to say it was just a cleaning? We did.
And we didn't up the game. I think, you know, it's pretty sad. Again, you coming back from Chicago, I was going to say him, but Chicago. And a lot of these courses that Deborah teaches, they're amazing. And I'm shocked by the number of dentists that don't bring team members. I'm like, where's your team? Well, they wouldn't want to come to this. I'm like,
yeah.
She's going to be sharing secrets for 30 years in 3 hours. Wouldn't it be valuable to listen? You know,
here's always my question, and whether it's in a class at the Chicago Midwinter or it's our class here behind me, which is at the Nash Institute, I always say this to doctors, and most of the time here it's postgraduate clinical training. So usually it's dentist only, but I say, you know, your first assignment is to brain dump. Your first assignment, when you go back to the office on Monday morning, you know, you go back to the team and say, you know, hey, by the way, I've just ordered these new burrs and I've just ordered, you know, blah, blah. But you need to sit down with your team and say, you should always schedule a team meeting following a course at the Hinman, at Chicago Midwinter, at the Greater New York, at any sort, even at a clinical course. You're doing Spear, you're doing, John Coyce. If you're doing anything, you need to go back to the team and say, I need to debrief you. I need to fill you in on what I learned because I want you to be on board with me.
Because you're maximizing the return on your investment. Yeah. Because most team members, good-hearted team members even know this, like, let's just distract the heck out of him so he doesn't come back and go, rah, 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 rah,
well, rah. Or they say, you know what? Kirk just came back from this course at the Nash Institute. Give him 2 weeks. He'll get over it. He'll get over it.
And you do because you don't remember.
Because change is hard.
It is.
And so I think what you have to train, it goes back to the culture. You know what? I always say, and you've heard me say this before, and it's probably on podcast number 222. If you're going to talk to your team, there's three things they need to know. And then I'll tell you, the second one is this. I mean, the first one is we hire grown-ups. You probably remember this. But the second thing, which is really important, is keep your knees bent. As a team, as a part of my team, part of our culture, is we are going to be innovative. We are going to change. We are going to constantly looking for how to do things better. So don't become stagnant.
Love it.
Stagnant is like a pond. And you know what pond water smells like?
Smells terrible. What's number three?
You get what you give.
Ooh, I like that.
You get what you give. You give to me, I'll absolutely give back to you. Yeah.
That's powerful.
And sometimes, you got to go back to this because there's got to be an attitude. I don't have to wait for you to give. I'll give first. And I'll give without expectation.
That's awesome. You guys, this is gold. Deborah Engelhardt Nash is dropping gold in this podcast. You better be taking notes. Come on.
Yeah.
This is great.
I just think that we sometimes, here's the other thing that we can talk about is you and I can talk about this forever. You know, when we talk about, is it good for the patient? Is it good for the practice? Is it good for the practice? If my team wants another $2 an hour more increase, we've got a cost of living increase or whatever. Is it good for the practice to do that? Yes, it is, because they're going to come back to work feeling valued, feeling important, feeling that they make a difference. I mean, some of the times I'll say, doctors, do not nickel and dime your team. If they're worth it, pay them what they're worth. Sometimes we can look at compensation and it's outrageous, but I turn around and say, what's going to be my return on that compensation? Look at your team as an asset, not a liability. And what's going to be my return on that investment?
100%. That's another podcast that I'm voluntold. We're going to talk about compensation thinking, and that would be a great one. In addition to the six questions,
how to have a great practice sale.
Yes, practice sale.
Oh my God,
phone skills. Yeah. I want to talk about scheduling. Look at this. I've already got you pre-scheduled for like five podcasts.
But I think it's important for doctors who are listening to this, if they go back in and say, you know what, let's go back in and ask ourselves this question.
Yeah.
Are our financial arrangements really good for our practice, or are they really good for the patient? That's why I'm such a big fan of outside financing, and you know, bringing it. What if we brought that up to the front of the offerings and not make it a punishment to the bottom of the offering?
100%.
What would happen? What would that be good for the patient if we said we have resources that will allow you to make smaller payments over a long period of time? Would it be good for the practice? Yes. Would it be good for the patient? Yes. Then why do you make it the fifth or sixth choice?
Yes. Totally agree. You
and
are
then
so
find
good.
Find the ways of saying it. And always say things, always say things with the patient's best interest in heart.
Yes.
It's not our policy. This is what we found our patients to prefer. This is what we found works best for our patients. This is what we found that makes our patients most comfortable, as opposed to, well, this is our policy.
Yeah.
See, one word changes everything.
You are such a gift to this profession. You can never retire. I'll be so mad at you if you ever retire. So... don't.
Well, as long as I can travel. I love working with people like you. I love working with teams. I love to see, and you do too, when you see somebody say, oh my gosh, you're right. That word changes everything. That phrase changes everything. That system changes everything. Yeah.
These two questions will change your life if you use them and listen to the answers. So, Deborah, I want you to talk about a couple things. Number one.
Let's back up. I'm sorry. I know it's your podcast, but go back to this. Great idea. If a doctor wants to get a point across, or rather than feeling confrontive to the team, just ask the question. Hey, before we do this, let me ask you this question. Is this going to be good for the patients? And is this going to be good for the practice? Help me understand the benefit to the patient and the benefit to the practice. And if you can answer yes, then it's probably the right thing to do. But if we question, if we're wondering whether or not it's going to be good for the patient, or we're wondering whether it's going to be good for the practice, let's rework it. Let's rethink it. So a doctor can innocently ask the question, hey, before we do this, let's ask ourselves this question.
You're a genius.
These two questions.
You are brilliant. Okay. So I know people are listening to this. They're going to be like, I got to find out more about her. How do I find out more about you? What do? I want you to talk about the Nash Institute. What do you do? So tell us, what do you do? Where do you go? How do I find out more about you?
Well, in addition to the Nash Institute for Dental Learning, which is, we do postgraduate training in cosmetic and aesthetic dentistry, but I also have actually two different courses. I have one dental business school, and it's a 2-day program. Sort of a rapid fire immersion program, and I also have a day program just called Communication Skills Tune-Up, because what happens, doctors come to the clinical training, and I always do about an hour to an hour and a half of communication skills and analytics and practice management. And then they say, oh my gosh, I want my team to hear you. So out of demand, we created a day of let's talk about how we talk. Because here's my premise, and I had this premise 32 years ago when I met my husband. It's one thing to know how to do the dentistry. It's another thing to know how to talk about it and get your patients to accept it, understand and accept it. It also, you and I talked about the belief cycle, helping your team understand that whole belief cycle of helping them understand that the patients can afford it. They do want it, as opposed to patients can't afford it, they don't want it. So we talk about how you change your belief cycle.
Okay, you have to explain that, because that is, there's like 100 things that you've taught me. That is one of my favorite, the belief cycle. Briefly describe that. What is the belief cycle?
Okay, so if you believe that the patients don't want it, can't afford it, they're not interested, that's where you will focus. I mean, I use the analogy of politicians. If I think politician A is the person, I will listen to the podcast. I will listen to the social media. I will read the sources that prove to me that I'm right. If I think patients don't want it, can't afford it, don't need it, I will create this. I will find ways to prove that I am right. So what happens is I will focus on that which I think is right. And then what happens is I will create behaviors that will prove that my beliefs are accurate. And then I'll get the results that I believed. Yeah. So if I think my patients don't want it, can't afford it, I'm not going to present it. I'm going to become insurance focused. I'm going to be money focused. I'm going to create my policies and my protocols and all of my behaviors towards the patient on what I believe. And it's going to perpetuate my premise, patients don't want it, can't afford it, don't need it. I've dug my own hole. I've dug my own hole. So now if I change my belief,
yes,
patients do want it. They can afford it. They do need it.
It attracts more people that want it, that want to pay for it, right?
And I'm going to behave differently. I'm going to approach the patient differently. It's one of my killer questions. I'm going to ask different questions. I'm going to present dentistry in a different way. Then, because how many times they say, well, we'd really like to do this for you, but your insurance isn't going to cover it. Well, you really need that. You know, we'd like to do composite, but your insurance is only going to pay for amalgam. Well, we'd really like to do, but your insurance. And then we say, you see, they were insurance driven. Really? Who drove them there? Yeah, you did.
You did. This is so powerful. Deborah, I'm going to have you back again and again and again and again.
That's
I
so
can't
fun
thank
with you.
Oh my gosh, it is so much fun. I hope you guys are taking notes. And don't worry if you're not, we're taking notes for you.
Questions.
Yes, two questions.
Good for the practice. And you can interchange them.
Yes.
Doesn't matter which way you ask. Just ask both of them.
100%.
You can ask, is it good for the patients first?
Yeah. I'm going to have Deborah back, and we're going to do we're going to do the 6 killer questions the next one. And then I've got a whole bunch more that I want to do. Deborah, you're the best. Thank you. Stick around while I say goodbye to everybody else, okay?
Okay.
So
see ya.
No, don't leave yet. So thank you guys for listening to the Best Practices Show. Hey, if you enjoyed today, which I know you did, please hit the share button, share this with your friends. I'm going to have Deborah back again and again. Send me an email. and let me know what you want her to talk about. I'll get her to talk about it. I'll ask her the questions, and we'll get the answers from one of the world's best experts in this arena. And if you weren't taking notes, we're taking notes for you. You can flip up to the show notes. You're going to see links to everything that Deborah mentioned and all of the outline of what we talked about. So check it out. Make sure you use it and create a better practice and better life. So until we see you guys next time or you hear from us next time, keep watching or keep listening to the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy your day. So there you have it. Another great episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Hey, and thank you for showing up. I just want to thank you for being here and sharing the good word with your friends. And if you're really enjoying the podcast, could you do me a favor? Could you go to wherever you consume the podcast and just give us a 4 or 5 star review? Here's what that does. It allows us to find other great people like you. I love this profession so much. I'm going to spend the rest of my professional life finding great information so that you can consume it and your friends can consume it so that you can create a better practice and a better life. So keep spreading the word and we will see you guys soon. Have a great day, everybody.